I feel like if you've done radio, then that skill can just lean into your television interviewing. The other thing is, I've always, you know, what can I do, right? So I just have a conversation with people, and that is making the person I'm talking to feel comfortable and making you be the star, because I'm not the star. Nobody cares about me.
Hey, everybody. That is Emmy Award-winning host Jane Kloss, who is just a terrific, terrific on-air personality. And she's talking about why she's such a great interviewer, and she's really terrific. She interviewed me several times for CBS, and somebody that you really, really are going to get to love in this interview. She's so fun, so funny. She talks about how she got in TV from being a little kid and wanting to be in TV, and also just, you know, why she's such a successful on-air do-it-yourselfer. She's a really good, great expert in that area. She's been on the Today Show, HSN. So I think you're going to really enjoy Jane. It's a really fun conversation with her, and I love her energy. And before we get to her, I did want to tell you, Permission to Speak, my Broadway show, out on tour. We got a lot of dates we've been adding. Go to paulmercurio.com to see the dates, get tickets. We're going to be August 23rd in Schaumburg, Illinois, August 24th, Indianapolis, in October, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. November, we're going to be at the Maryland House in Annapolis, Maryland. January, we're going to be at the Dr. Phillips Center in Orlando. Going back there, had really great shows, and we've added second time down there. Really awesome venue, awesome audiences. And then United Theater, Rhode Island, my home state, United Theater in March of 2025. So, and also July 12th, coming right up, doing stand-up at the Kennedy Center. That's right, the Kennedy Center. So there you go. I'm big time, everybody. I'm big time. July 12th, one show. Check it out if you're in the DC area. PaulMercurio.com for tickets. And one last thing. So I went to my cardiologist for a checkup, and I'm waiting in the waiting area there, the waiting room, and I'm a little hungry. So I see they got snacks. I go over, and I'm thinking like maybe veggie chips or something, maybe, you know, little hummus or something, or pretzels and hummus thing, you know, that. Nope. They got double stuffed Oreos and candy bars. I don't know. That's a little conflict of interest. Is that really what you want to do as a cardiologist? Feed your patients double stuffed Oreos and candy bars? Yeah, I don't know. Seems like the cardiologist is trying to generate business for himself. Why stop there, really? How about just cups of fat? Instead of like a water cooler, have like a water cooler filled with fat. You just put your cup there, you get a nice cup of fat, have a heart attack, and the cardiologist goes to Paris flying first class and staying at the Ritz. See how that works? I get the game. All right. Anyway, enjoy, Jane, and hope to see you folks out on the road July 12th, Kennedy Center stand-up, and then a bunch of Permission to Speak Broadway show dates, paulmercurio.com. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. I have a very special guest, a dear friend. We became friends about a year ago in Chicago. Jane Kloss is a fabulous, fabulous television personality, two-time Emmy winning personality. She hosts a really cool show, Craft Room Crash. She's a lifestyle correspondent on CBS2 Chicago. And she also hosts this amazing podcast, Creative Living, which is a lifestyle podcast that covers everything from, making clothes to cooking to decorating your home. And if that's not enough, in her spare time, she saves babies from wells. When they fall down the well, she's the one that goes in. So
that's me. Yeah. And sometimes I don't even wear an undersuit.
Yeah, you just go. She walks around naked a lot in Chicago. Great to have you on my show, finally.
Finally. It's great to be on your show, finally. I do feel like with that intro, I should be interviewing you.
No. You did such a great interview of me when I was there with in November, I guess it was. Yeah, last November with the Permission to Speak, which I'm bringing back in August to Schaumburg. So, but I want to talk about you and everything you're doing and you've been doing. And you were like, that was one of the best interviews somebody ever did with me because it was really got into my background, but in a succinct way. And you're really conversational. And I know you started in radio in Atlanta and Chicago. What did you learn in radio that allowed you to be so good in interviewing people and on television, because you're really, really good at it. And it's not easy. And I could tell when I'm being interviewed or somebody's just like nodding, but they're not listening. And you are so quick on your feet. So where did that skill set come from?
That's so nice. I think it's just about having a conversation. We always have said in radio, and no offense to any of my friends in late night television, but you have 25 producers or more writers, and you're producing an hour. You're writing for an hour. We're on the air live for 3 to 4 hours, and it just has to happen. Right. So I feel like if you've done radio, then that skill can just lean into your television interviewing. The other thing is, I've always, what can I do, right? So I just have a conversation with people, and that is making the person I'm talking to feel comfortable and making you be the star, because I'm not the star. Nobody cares about me.
Right, but I get the sense that you actually cared about the conversation. So I can tell, I talk to the audience a lot in my stand-up, or a good amount, and that was the basis for my Broadway show, which is bringing audience members on stage. And if I'm talking to them, I really have to care about the conversations. And I got a sense that you really cared about hearing about my background. And, you kept asking me to borrow money, which I thought was weird, but,
You gave it to me, which is super.
Oh, my God, I forgot.
Do I have to pay you that back?
Make me something creative in your thing and whatever, like an embroidered something. I got the sense that you really care about the conversations. And I think that's a big part of it. Like, you can't fake that,
No, well, the thing is, I don't really want to talk about myself. I want to talk about you. I want to ask questions about you. I think about myself all day long. I mean, you should walk around in this brain. There's a lot going on in there.
It's weird because I think about you all day long, too.
As you should.
So weird.
Most people should. Yes. Yeah. But the thing, I want to hear more. I love a backstory. I want to know, what you were thinking about when you were 7. What was your favorite song when you were 17? Were you the same person at 27? All of those things. Where did you live? How's your mom? All those things I want to know about you, because I actually really do care, because it just takes a peek behind the curtain of who you are. So yeah.
So how did this start for you? Did you know as a kid, were you always gregarious like this? Did you know as a kid you wanted to do something involving a microphone, whether it's radio or TV or something performative?
Yeah. So I was super shy as a kid. My 7th grade teacher.
Really?
Yeah. My 7th grade teacher said to my parents, "I don't know about Janie. She sits in the corner and she's very shy." But that being said, prior to that, I thought I was going to be the next Katie Couric. I thought the Today Show, it was Jane Pauley, Katie Couric. And then I thought it was going to be Jane Manzouras, my maiden name Manzouras. So it was going to go Jane, Katie, Jane. And then Deborah Norville was in. So I'm like, okay, Jane, Katie, Deborah, Jane. That's what I thought it was. And I would interview with a
How old are you at this point where you're
5, 6, 7, 8, 9?
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
What was it about them that captured you?
I just loved it. I don't know what it was. I mean, I watched TV, and you're not local Chicago. So there was a woman who was the spokesperson for the rock station, The Loop 97.9. Her name was Lorelai.
You grew up right outside of Chicago, right?
I did. Yeah. And grew up in the city, or born in the city, moved out to the burbs. But this personality, Lorelai, would be on TV, and she was this sex pot, rock and roll chick. And she'd say The Loop. I'm like, oh, I want to be Lorelai. And then I would watch.
It's like the woman who's the narrator of The Warriors movie. I don't know if you've seen that movie, but she's just a radio personality, and they do a tight shot of her and lips on them and the microphone, and she talks like that. She's like, "Hey, Warriors," and she sends messages out to rival gangs to go beat up the Warriors. Anyway, that's how it sounds. So you heard this woman on radio,
and I would mimic Katie Couric. And do you remember, is it Doris Day? She's like, "Why don't you come up and see me sometime?" So I would bet. I don't know why that was in my brain.
You mean Mae West?
Yeah, Mae West. Thank you. That's what I meant.
Wow.
So I would be running outside playing with my neighbors, and I would come in to wash my hands or go to the bathroom, whatever. And I'd look in the mirror and say, "Why don't you come up and see me sometime?" So that was in my head. And then this woman that was on The Loop, and then I would watch The Morning Show. I think it's because they're all having fun and they're just playing around. And so I always wanted to do this. I never thought that I was smart enough or pretty enough or good enough to do it. How about really? That for a teenager self-esteem?
Yeah. And so how did that, I mean, you're obviously beautiful. How did that, so you had a lot of plastic surgery, but anyway, how did that change? How did you, so you get to teenage years and you're still focused on this dream and you're starting, did you do things in school? Were you?
I did a lot of things. This shy seventh grader that I mentioned still wanted to do all this. She was just shy. I got through that through the help of really great friends when I was in high school. And I did a lot in high school. I was like president of the class, on student council, president or whatever, captain of cheerleading. So I did a lot. I was very, very active. Still didn't have a lot of self-esteem to want to go into broadcasting. So I went away to college and I said, I can't go into broadcasting. My hair is too curly. My nose is too big. I can't do this. So I didn't major in broadcasting. I majored in public relations. And then when I got into the working world and was doing public relations, I realized that the talent wasn't giving me what I needed. So then, I don't know, everything flipped and a TV station came to me and said, well, will you just do this on camera? And I said, sure.
Wow.
Yeah. So I didn't go the normal route. I didn't go to broadcast.
So you were working in PR. Mm-hmm. You weren't happy with the work product that whatever the personalities were giving you. So you went in and did it yourself.
So I was working at a radio station. So I was doing a lot of marketing and promotions prior to. I worked for Michael Jordan's restaurant back in the day when the Bulls were winning. Then I moved to Phoenix and my brother was opening up a restaurant. I was doing all the marketing and public relations for opening this big, you know, entertainment venue. And at the time, there was a PR firm I worked with, and I got into radio doing promotions and marketing for them when that building closed, the entertainment venue closed. And the radio station was where I was doing all that promotion and marketing. And that's when the TV said, why don't you just take us on the tour of this rock venue? Because you're a lot of fun. You seem to know what's going on. I'm like, all right, let's do it. And then that became a weekly gig for me. And that's how I got into it. So it wasn't because I put myself in it. I fell into it, luckily, and I love it.
Wow, that's amazing. And that's really the way things happen sometimes. You know, I just had John Ratzenberger, who plays Cliff Clavin on Cheers. And the way he got the part was he went into audition and he had never auditioned before. He was an improviser in England, not even trained as an improviser. He just started doing a show with a friend 10 years. And he goes in for the audition and he said, I was terrible. But as he was leaving, he said, do you have a bar know-it-all? And they go, what do you mean? You know, like there's always
the bar know-it-all, of course.
And they go, no. And he goes, well, let me show you something. And he went over and grabbed the Bic pen and then started to ramble about the origins of the Bic pen. And then they called him and said, we want to try that character out for 7 episodes. And that's how it came about.
Gosh, so that's genius.
Yeah, it's like that stories like that, like yours, like you just sort of your right place, right time. But also I think the universe knows what your passion is and lines you up, right?
Yeah, I think so. I always, you know, by the time that was happening, I was 28. Mm. So I took a long time after college to goof around and go to rock shows and figure out what I wanted to do. I didn't know. And that happened. I always tell, you know, kids that are like, oh, no, I'm like, you know what? You have till 28. Try everything before then. And the right thing will fall into your lap. And then, you know, the first thing may not pay a lot of money, but you may get a ton of experience. Maybe the next thing pays a lot of money and you're not doing the exact thing that you want, but it's in line with where you want to go. I'm like, all of those things will happen along the way. But yeah, I feel like it was supposed to happen that way.
Yeah. And then that sort of started to lead to television opportunities for you.
Yeah. I've always worked in radio and television at the exact same time. So I stayed in Phoenix. I did a radio show. I worked on the TV. Then I came back to Chicago, did a radio show, worked on TV, always at the same time. And I moved to Atlanta, did radio. And there I did a little TV, but I was mostly the TV I did was the in-arena hosting for the Atlanta Hawks. Oh. So that was fun because it's like a live show in the arena. And I had to use all my TV skills to do that. And they wouldn't have hired me had I not had those TV skills. So I've always done both of those medias at the same time, like in conjunction with one another. The last 12 years, I'd mostly only been doing television. And that's when I really, like, this show Creative Living that I did was like peeling off a layer of my skin and it came to life with this gorgeous studio and this beautiful show about creating and inspiration and everything lifestyle. And that's where I won the Emmys. And I'll tell you why I won them, because I loved the show and I gave it everything I had.
Yeah. And that came about, that's something you created or you stepped into, was already created. And then you would have been thinking about doing some kind of a lifestyle craft show.
Well, so I was looking for something to do. I was doing like a home shopping telly show in England. So for 19 months, I would go back and I would still do radio, but I'd go to England and I'd film for 10 days this live show. And it was like shopping telly. And
when how did that come about? And why did you do it in England instead of here? Because you've been on the Today Show, you've been on HSN, you've been on all the national shows as as a television personality and as a crafting expert.
Yeah.
But how did England happen?
So again, I was looking for the next thing and always doing radio. Maybe I have a problem with commitment, Paul. Maybe that's it.
Well, your husband said you do, but that's a conversation for another day.
Right. You're not supposed to say that. I saw that there was this, it was called Create and Craft, and I saw it and I'm like, well, why am I not on Create and Craft? What's happening? So I just called the guy and he was like, hello, this is Simon. And I'm like, hey, Simon, I'm Jane. I like to make things. And he looked at my website and he's like, okay, come here. We want to meet you. So I flew out and met them. They hired me to be the host. I said, I can't be here all the time. They go, oh, that's fine. You can come out for 10 days and go home. Then I went back to the radio station and I said, hey, can I leave for 10 days every month? They said, sure.
Wow. This is amazing.
I know. So I did that for 19 months. I was homesick. I didn't love being away for 10 days at stretch. But it was, you know, I got great miles on the airline.
Yeah. So were you now at this point, this crafting, passion of yours, was this just something that started at home and just became more and more something that you just were really connecting to? And then you started to see an opportunity that this could be part of your brand?
So I've always been a creative maker since I was a little kid. So probably back to that same time when I was interviewing anybody who would sit down and talk to my fake microphone, I would wake up my mom at 4 a.m. and say, mommy, is it morning time yet? I have an idea. I want to make something. So, you know, using toilet paper rolls or paper towels or old cigar boxes, I was always making something either crafty or sewing. She taught me how to sew when I was 7 because she didn't want to see me hand stitch my Barbie doll clothes. And I was cooking and, you know, so do you want to go to tumbling class? I said, tumbling class? I don't want to fall down. I want to go to cooking class. So I took cooking class. So it was always making. This creative thing has always been in me. And then around 2010, I was in Atlanta. And that is when I said, how can I put my passion of inspiring people to create with what I do, whether it be audio or visual? And that's where it all started. And so I've been on this journey, this creative journey, for a long time, like trying to work and produce shows, trying to do more creative things on television. And that's when Creative Living came about, because they saw the things that I was producing and filming and putting out there. And somebody called and said, I saw this. I love what you're doing. We're thinking about putting a show on the air. Do you think you want to host it? I said, yeah, absolutely. I want to host it.
So the show was sort of in the works. And now tell me, and I think I know the answer to this, because this is what happened with me when I was on Wall Street and Jay Leno did my joke. I would imagine what connects for you going back to your 13 and you sew something, you make a pot holder, whatever it might be. It's seeing this thing that didn't exist come to life through your eyes, brain, heart, and hands, right? That you don't get really in any other part of your life. Is that the connection that happened, the spark, the magic?
It's about the sense of satisfaction you get when you make it yourself. And so before I was showing anybody what to do, and listen, I'm not a good teacher. I don't sit down and have the patience to go, okay, 5 days, 5 inches. I'm not good at it. I want you to be inspired. I want you to try it. Go take lessons somewhere else.
Right.
Let me inspire you to upcycle or just to do something with your hands. And it's because of that sense of satisfaction. So before any of that, I would make a ball gown. I'd start at 8 a.m. and I'd wear it to an event clients at night because I could make it. So it's kind of a blessing and a curse. But there's that moment when somebody's, oh, what are you wearing? Or who made that? Where'd you get that? And you're like, oh, I made it myself. And so that could be in home and housewares. That could be in your garments. That can be in something that you're selling. I mean, there's so many ways to make things and have that sense of satisfaction. And I feel like in today's world, more and more people are catching on to this creative inspiration, like spend a little bit of time and flow of creativity, but very similar to your joke writing. Yes.
Right. And so as you're doing this, you're still juggling the radio and your work at CBS2. And so how are you doing all of that? But I would imagine that one informs the other, like one skill set in one area helps you in another area.
Yeah. You know what? Thank you for understanding me, Paul. Really? Because most people go, you do so much. I don't know what, I don't understand. I don't get it. I'm like, I'm a Greek menu of what do you need? Like I can do it all. But the thing is, and what I tell everybody is all connected. It's one umbrella and
every
single thing is connected to the other.
If
you're producing something or you're booking it, you're writing it, you're creating it, like everything has to come from the idea. What's the content? How does it look? Is it audio? Is it visual? Is it me being the host? Is it me being the expert? Like, so there's so many ways that you're going to spin this. It's the same thing as planning an event. When I worked at Michael Jordan's restaurant, it was like, okay, you want a burger party? You want a steak party? You got kids coming? You got, you know, C-suite people. So you're just planning it and everything is connected. So for me, it just happens to be in lifestyle. Because if I stood in front of a burning building back when I wore 17-inch heels with gigantic curly hair, you would say, I don't believe you. So I never could be a news person. It was always about this inspiring people and lifestyle.
Right. And so when people are trying to learn how to do this and do it well, take it from, gluing macaroni to a piece of paper to like something, how do they do that? How do you teach them? Is there a common pitfall that you see in people trying to get their passion off the ground in this area?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways. So first thing I see a lot are my lawyer and doctor friends going, I can't do it. I'm not creative. I can't do it. And I say, yeah, you can do it. Let's just try. And then, I don't do a house party with crafts. I have with friends. And that's when I get that pushback. I don't want to do it. But when they do it and it comes out and it's super cool, they've got the sense of satisfaction. They did it themselves. And then they will go do it again with their friends. So that's one thing that I see a lot of. The other half of it is people who are experienced makers, who are already creative. Like maybe you're a painter or maybe you can quilt, but we're doing something with mixed media. You have this in your head. All you need to do is see it, get inspired. Then you could find the supplies and go do it yourself. It's not about teaching. It's about, oh, how have you thought of trying it this way? And then that person will take it to the next level. I was in Toronto, Canada over the weekend with 13 of my family members on my husband's side, all girls because the boys were golfing. And we made coasters, decoupage coasters. So you take a napkin, maybe a funny napkin. You know how they have those weird funny napkins?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have to have a cup of coffee before you talk to my face. That those.
Yeah.
So we would take those, you cut them and you put them on a tile. And then you put them, you know, cover them with this glue and then you glaze them and you put a little cork on the back. Sounds hard, super easy. Every single person walked out of there by the end of the weekend. We did it the first night, took 1 hour. They left Sunday and they were like, that was so fun. And I'm using my coaster.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's a moment. It's something for you to take away, whether you do it again or you just have the moment of experience.
So you feel like you're bringing something to people's lives beyond what you do as a reporter, let's say, as an anchor, as a radio host.
Yeah. So as a radio host, you want to give them the news. So you want, you know, when I worked at all kinds of different stations, but whether it's like the big news, national, you do a local news story, then you do a kicker. You always want to have some sort of fun. And you know this, you want to have fun and make people laugh. And because it's hard to always think of the hard, big, bad stuff.
Yeah.
And then if you are doing a segment on the news, you want to ask the people the story. Like, I want to know about you. Why am I interviewing you? Or I hosted a show called Living Healthy Chicago for 12 years here in Chicago. And it was telling inspiring stories about people who are living a healthy life. It was mm-hmm. ways for you to live healthier. So I think my whole base, my foundation is wanting you to live a better, healthier life, however right. that works, whether it's through creativity or inspiration or health or wellness or a funny story.
And if someone's listening and they're like, I'm not crafty, how do I get started? And then if you're already starting, how do you up your game? Like, I know you made coasters with the family. They were really easy, but like, what is the key? Do you have to build your confidence, like one project at a time kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, you got to make mistakes.
Yeah.
It's like, it's reps. It's with anything. You want to buy right. a house, you got to see enough houses. You right. want to be a comic, you got to do enough reps out. You want to be right. a band, you got to have enough songs. Or imitate enough songs. So again, it's back to trying and failing. And I think in creativity, you can't fail because, oh, I made a mistake. Well, no, you didn't make a mistake. Instead of it being, you know, an armhole, let's turn it into a Christmas stocking. So there's so many ways that you can spin it and make it better. Yeah. So you can't just be creative, like turn it into the next thing. Yes. There are piles and piles of unfinished projects in my house and in my craft space. Well, that's because I'm busy, but also because I'm like, nah, that didn't inspire me. Let's move on to the next thing that does.
Oh, is that what happens? You just lose your interest in it?
Yeah. Or for me, if I can't finish it in a day, I don't really want to come back to it.
That's the Greek in you, I guess.
Just get it done. Work at it. Make it happen.
Did you, I come from an Italian family and I think they're similar. Do you think your ethnicity sort of feeds this sort of, there's a very much a do-it-yourself kind of attitude about Italians and I think Greeks as well and other ethnicities. Do you think that has had something, it's either in your DNA or informed you as a kid or
right.
going on? Any of that?
Yeah, I think so. I do believe it's in the DNA. You know, a lot of my Greek friends, like everyone's a hard worker. It's that work ethic that I think that we have, such as Italians do as well. So I think it's a work ethic. My mother and father, well, my dad was 55 years old when I was born. So he was retired, but he was, very busy, successful. He was a colonel in the Air Force and did a whole bunch of other things, but he raised the kids while mom went to work, but they were both very active and very work oriented. And mm-hmm. I think that was instilled through them. But I do know that, you know, I our ethnicity, we work hard.
That's yeah. And do
those
you
diners, you know?
Have you? I could see you in a diner.
My dad had a diner. It was called
Oh, you did? So you worked in a wow, I love cliches. That's awesome. Stereotypes. I'm a big fan.
Good. I'm so happy. I can make you happy.
Did you yell like I need six eggs over Wheezy with a side of bacon and a railroad car, like that kind of stuff?
No, I just went ding, ding, order up. No, I was I wasn't born yet when the diner was there. My older sister would go every day after school and have a slice of blueberry pie and a cheeseburger. So, but when the younger set of kids came along, they closed the diner, which I'm so bummed out about.
Yeah. Has there ever been a craft where you're like, I can't get this? Like, have you ever done something where you're like, what the, I can't.
Yeah. So I can't crochet. I started a crochet. It's like 12 inches long or like wide. And when you turn the corner on a crochet to make a blanket, I have this thing. It's like 6 miles long. I can't
just make like it. A long skinny sock or something.
Yes. I don't know. I've been working on it for
make a scarf out of it.
I could make a scarf out of it. Yes. But I was trying to make a blanket and it's too tight. I don't practice enough to do it. My yaya, which is a grandma in Greek, she was amazing. I have blankets from her like everywhere. So she would try to teach me how to crochet, just like she tried to teach me how to speak Greek. And I was like, no, I don't want to learn either one of those things. So that is the one thing I cannot do. I can't crochet.
So do you, you're so
I can't perfect. Do it.
So, and you also have like a line of products and things, but is this kind of becoming more of your focus now that the creative living and really building that up more?
Yeah, I think so.
Because I mean, you've got, you know, so many irons in the fire and you can always go and do radio if you want as well. How do you decide, okay, I'm going to hone my energy a little bit and focus in this area, or that area?
So I really enjoy broadcasting and I really enjoy inspiring people. So if it's inspiring them to live better creatively, whatever that means to them, that's what I want to do. And I feel like I want to, whatever I do, I want to have joy. So if that's what brings me joy, that's what I'm going to lean into. And that's this creative space. And of course, with social media, everyone's doing something creative. And if you're not doing something creative, you're talking about politics, you know, or you're talking about your family. So for me, this is just my little, this is my space. This is where I feel like I can give back and really leave something.
So you've done like so many amazing things and I'm sure met amazing people. Has there been this one, like, I don't believe it moment other than meeting me for the first time?
I mean, I can't. Nothing tops it.
Oh my God. You fainted. We had to give you water. It was crazy. And I was wearing a Robert Goulet mask. You thought I was Robert Goulet. That's an old reference for people.
Robert Goulet.
I don't know why.
Mae West.
I don't know why I pull that out of my ass, but you're Mae West and I'm Robert Goulet. Let's run off together. And I think if we were married, we'd have a lot of fun, but then we'd at some point kill each other because we have the same energy. There's like a lot of energy. I think like my wife is a little more chill. I don't know about your husband, but like, I think.
Husband's German. He's very chill. He's just super. My husband's the nicest person and he's very, very handsome. Mm-hmm. And he's as handsome on the outside as good as he on the inside, but he's like very calm. And sometimes we're out and he'll just squeeze my knee. Meaning like stop talking or calm down.
It's funny because my wife tases me when I'm
like
which
dog.
Is a little bit more obvious. Like, why are you tasing your husband? Well, because he won't shut up.
Well, you guys have been married longer.
Yeah, we have been married. We'll be together a long
time.
We'll
get there. Give us another 5 years.
So are you, it's your first marriage?
My first marriage. I waited forever and ever to get married.
Why did you wait so long?
And I'm like very non-committal.
Did you come close and then like cut it off?
Never. Normally. I mean, so the energy and then, you know, that high energy, I think that scares some people away. So no, never been close. Had lots of boyfriends. One guy that I dated a long time ago, I was, you know, the energy's pretty high. He's like, hold on. This is before cannabis was legal. He'd be like, I gotta go. I'm going to go smoke this so we can hang out all day. I'm like, wait, what does that mean? I was just like blissfully ignorant. I'm like, okay. Because I had so much energy. Now, they would always break up with me saying, you know, I just, really? This is not right. I'm like,
really?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, that's because you always, from what I understand, challenge men to arm wrestling tournament.
And I'm very strong.
You are. Yeah. You did it to me and you beat me badly. Made me cry. So.
Well, you don't eat your spinach and then, you know.
I don't. So tell me a big moment where you're like, either it turned the corner for you to the next thing, next big thing, or just like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened or this is happening to
me. I have two. I have one serious one and then one stupid one. So the stupid one first. So we work in this business and they say, oh, awards don't matter. You know, it's no big deal. You do what you do because you love it. And we do. Right. We get laid off a lot. We scratch and claw for gigs. We are auditioning and then you're getting rejected. So it's tough, right? And when I won my very first Emmy, and these are regional Emmys, people. I'm not to the
it's just as good.
Well, I had worked on my show Creative Living. I was really excited about it.
And you're working in a big market. You're like the only bigger markets are New York and LA. So like you're right there.
Thank you. So we're at the awards and I was with the folks from the station at the table and I got to bring a guest. So my husband, Kurt, was there and I invited my brother, George, and his wife, Jamie. And my brother's been on this journey with me forever. Like he hears me complain about the people and the this and I got fired or I got laid off and now I have no job and here's what I'm going to do. And so he's on it. So we're sitting there at the table. My category comes up. They're going through all the names. I'm like, oh, there's no way I'm going to win next to that guy. He's going to win. I'm like, that guy's going to win. And then they said my name.
Wow.
And for me, that was validation that I was supposed to be doing what I was doing and that all of this work paid off. I'll tell you, I've been working probably 20 or more years. My brother jumps up from the table. I'm sitting at the table with my hands and my face and my hands. My brother jumps up and my husband from the table up and down, cheering and screaming like they just won the Stanley Cup. That's my God, awesome. What are you doing? It was so funny that they were so...
They were jumping up and down and screaming, how much did we win? How much did you get for this? Do we get money? No money. Oh,
no money. This didn't work. No, it was really fun. That, for me, seeing them more excited than me was... Yeah. The moment that I was like, okay, I love what I'm doing and I want to keep doing it. And that validated that creative stuff too, because people love the creative side.
Yeah.
So even when I pitch this around, like, oh, nobody wants to like glue a hammer on, you know, and no, they do. They like it. Yeah. The other one, I did this segment and it was called We Make for Good. It was a company that hired me because they knew that I could put together a series, like a docu-series. And they sent me all over the country. And I met people who would make something and then give it to somebody in need. So in Logan, Utah, there was a company that would make little care, you know, back baskets and backpacks, and but they would make these little stuffed animals and they would give them to kids that were foster kids that were taken in the middle of the night. They would get to this foster care home. They would have nothing. They would maybe be wearing underwear because they would come and get taken out of the home in the middle of the night. They'd get nothing. And they would open this bag and they would have this pillow that was theirs and all theirs. And they had pajamas. And they, and that was, to me, like so meaningful. Yeah. That there was a cancer center in Columbus, Georgia, where this group would make pillows for people that were going through cancer treatment. Hmm. And they would get together and sew these pillows. And then in Yonkers, New York, or in Yonkers, there was a women's group that did quilting. And they then would give the quilts to a domestic violence shelter. So we're in the domestic violence shelter. I'm talking to this woman who I thought was just was part of the center. And she's talking about having this apartment here and she's safe and that this quilt is mine and it's all mine and nobody can take it.
Wow.
That's when I realized, oh, she was a victim of domestic violence.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the good things that people do, I mean, that really, I took a lot away from that series and I thought, wow, I have nothing wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. That, I mean, if you can have that impact, if you could do something you love and then what you're doing has such a powerful impact, that's like icing on the cake. You've kind of hit the lottery. And that, and I know I've had people come up after some stand-up shows and go, oh, my, you know, spouse just died or something and I need it or whatever. And this really helped. Like, so you forget, like, and the same thing with radio, I would imagine. You're in that little room and you forget, like when I do radio shows as a guest, then I'll be out in the town where I did it. And somebody's like, oh, I heard you, whatever. You forget that lots of people are hearing you and the impact that you have, right?
Yeah, of course you forget. Sometimes that, you know, doing radio for all these years, I was sitting in a diner one time with one of my radio partners who he's now in Dallas, but this group came over and they go, oh, we thought we recognized your voices. We listen to you two every morning. I'm like, oh, that's right. And they go, you said blah, blah, blah. And I go, oh, and that was on the air. I thought that was in person or in private. You know, I don't remember what I say on the air versus what I just say to you in private. So that is a skill I had to learn.
And how do you like chill? Do you like ever, I mean, I can't see you sitting still. I think you're kind of like me a little bit. You're always like, whatever,
like a shark. You can't stop moving.
Yeah, exactly. Like right now during this interview, people don't know it. Your hands are below the bottom of the screen. And she actually just knitted an entire suit.
Well, we know I can't knit. So I,
knitting is different than crocheting, isn't it?
I can't knit either.
Oh, you can't. No. My wife can knit. She loves to sew. She's been sewing since she was a kid.
Wow.
And my mother was a seamstress and could sew, and she would sew all of our own clothes when we were little. Yeah.
Do you still have any of those?
This shirt I'm wearing, I made my mother at 96 sew it because that's what I do. I run a sweatshop in Rhode Island. So
nice.
If you want to come and be part of it.
Can I be in the sweatshop or do I get to run it?
No, I think you would run the sweatshop because you have a very commanding way
Let's
about
do this.
Let's get this done. So I give them 3-minute breaks every 12 hours because, you know, we got to get stuff going. You know what I'm saying?
3-minute break is what you get in radio. 3 minutes for a song, you can hit the bathroom and get back. So it's fine if you're in your Rhode Island sweatshop. Yeah, I actually was curious if you still had anything your mom made you when you were a little kid and you put it on, you look like Baby Huey.
I actually have a sweater that she made. I have a sweater that my wife, she made her own prom gowns. And she really loved, and she made her, and she
you did not make her
wedding.
Right,
she made her wedding dress. Wow, but it's not a gown. It's just like a dress, but like, Yeah, she just loves to sew, and she's a and she knitted me a one of those Iceland like ski sweaters.
Oh,
yeah, and I use that to change the oil in the car. You know, because I
she
don't
can make
care.
Another one.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you care? Wait a minute, she might be my favorite. Like, I don't know. You might be out. She might be in.
Oh, I think you're gonna like her way more than you like me. Absolutely, she's really sweet. And a big drinker, you know, but, you know, you have to work around that.
That's fine. No, whatever.
And she has, like back, she has back hair, but that's a weird thing that you don't need to know. No, she's really sweet. And she's like so calming. And she she does it less now, but she made a lot of stuff for my son when he was little. And yeah, and when I come back to Chicago, we got to hang out. I'll come over to the house.
Come over to the house.
You have a pool?
Come over. We don't have a pool.
Okay, can you get
our neighbor has a pool.
All right, we'll go to your neighbor's pool. I like to swim naked, by the way.
That's totally fine. Matthew swims naked too. He's a neighbor kid. Yes, I would love for you to
come. No, I'm kidding. I don't want to come.
Your wife coming?
I think she might. She might. We're coming for to shoot the late show. And I'm also doing my that third week of August for the Democratic National Convention. And then where I'm staying doing my Broadway show out in Schaumburg. So, you know, I want to cruise Chicago with like a celebrity, you know.
I want to take you around. I want you to come over. When we get tired of each other, your wife can stay. I've got about 15 sewing machines that we can goof around on.
Oh, wow, you're going to go crazy.
I know it.
So, creativeliving.com, like let's let people know how they can hear the podcast. Go to janeklaus.com, your website. Give all that out so people know.
Yeah. So everything, just go to janeklaus.com, JaneKlauss. Like Santa Claus, but Klaus with two S's for extra special. JaneKlaus.com.
That's how I think of it. Well, your husband is German. His name Kurt Klaus.
Yeah. KC.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, that's awesome. That's a great
name.
That's
a good family. I love them. Yeah, you know, side note, I got married so late. I decided I changed my name. So the first half of my life is Manzuris, and then the back half is a Klaus. We'll see what happens. So we'll see which one I like best.
Yeah. Well, you know, I like the Klaus. It just rolls off your tongue. Although Manzuris is good. Yeah, I like that. It sounds a little bit like a rash. I have a Manzuris on my thigh. Just put some calamine. I don't know what I'm talking about.
sitting on your leg. I'm like, oh, I got a Manzuris on my thigh.
When we hung out, we met and we did the segment, you touched me and then I had a rash on my arm. I think I got a Manzuris. That's what it
a little. Wait, the funniest thing about this is in Greek, Moutsouri is like a smudge of dirt on you. So
there you go. See? I sensed it. I sensed it. you're the best. I love you. Thanks for being on. I'm so glad that I came to Chicago in November and made a new longtime friend. You're the best. Yeah. JaneKlaus.com or JaneManzuris.com down the road if she changes her mind. Who knows?
Yeah, well, he's German, you know.
And we'll see you for Naked Swimming in August.
Okay, can't wait. Thank you, Paul. You're the best.
Great to have you on.
All right, there you go. Jane Kloss. She's awesome. I love her. Isn't her energy fantastic? She's so, so good and so talented. Hope to see you guys on the road. PaulMercurio.com for tickets. July 12th, we got stand-up at the Kennedy Center and then a whole bunch of permission to speak dates coming up. And hope to see you guys on the road. See you soon. Thanks for checking out the podcast. See you next week, everybody.